From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made during a negotiation where a female employee was asking for a raise. According to the American Association of University Women, women in this country earn 70 cents on every dollar earned by men, and the pay disparity is even greater for women of color. Previous research showed that women were less likely than men to negotiate their salaries or ask for raises. But data from one 2018 study shows that women do, in fact, ask for raises just about as often as men do, but they are less likely to get them. According to that study, women who asked for a raise obtained it 15% of the time. Men who asked for a raise got it 20% of the time. While that difference may sound modest, it is not. It adds up over time. It's got implications on paying for childcare, education, and retirement. The American Association of University Women has made it its goal to eliminate the gender pay gap by the year 2030. And to reach that goal, it has launched an online salary negotiation workshop, as well as in-person trainings throughout the country. We'll get a chance to observe two mock negotiations on this program today, but we'll also ask the question, if women are statistically less likely than men to receive raises, even when they do ask, is negotiation training enough? What can be done to address structural issues that lead to pay inequity? Our guests this hour are here to help us explore those questions and answer yours as well. And the person who's going to help us lead us through a mock negotiation has been leading salary negotiation trainings in our community. She's also an associate professor of music leadership and the graduate degree program director at the Institute for Music Leadership at the Eastman School. That's Rachel Roberts. Rachel, welcome. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Also with us is Irene Canyo, creator, executive producer, and host of No Labels Included on WAYO 104.3 FM. Irene, welcome back to the program. Nice to have you.
Thanks for having me again.
And Hilda Rosario Escher is here, former president and CEO of the Ibero American Action League, and the first time on this program post Ibero, now executive vice president for government and community affairs at All American Home Care. Welcome back. Nice to have you.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
Rachel, I sort of wish we didn't need you.
I wish
this wasn't
an issue.
You know what I mean? I bring this up because, you know, I don't mean to sort of be flip about it, but in this case, I'm looking at a lot of stories about companies that are kind of throwing out the negotiations. Reddit, among others, some other CEOs saying, you know what, we're just not going to negotiate anymore. This is the job. This is what it pays. We're not going to make you negotiate. But that's still not the norm. It's not the world we live in yet. And there are some of these inequities. What do you think, what's the landscape look like right now in terms of who tends to get raises and how you approach these negotiations?
I'm speaking from my own opinion.
Of course.
And a lot of studies that I've read. My perception of what's going on right now is that things are starting to change. Slowly, but things are starting to change. I, for the past almost decade, had lived in Boston. And for instance, there, the mayor, Marty Walsh, has an initiative to eliminate the gender wage gap and make it the best city for working women in the country. His example is taking a three-pronged approach to help eliminate this gender divide. And the third piece of his work is to offer free salary negotiations for women all across the city. In doing that, he has partnered with AAUW, who has developed this negotiation training, and made it available for everyone, men and women across the city, though targeted mostly towards women, and to train them how to be advocates for the gender wage gap, where they fit in, how to talk with your employers, supervisors, or when you are negotiating for a new position.
Yeah.
So there's multiple cities across the country who have partnered with AAUW and are doing this. But as a whole in this country, as you just cited, women are being paid less than men on average.
Rochesternow.org, women earn 70 cents for every dollar paid to men. Latina women in New York typically make 56 cents for every dollar paid to white men. Black women in New York earn 66 cents for every dollar paid to white men. Now, that's overall earnings. Mm-hmm. In terms of when it's same job, same work, the gap narrows, but there is still a gap. And when it comes to the idea that, well, women don't ask for raises, again, this, at least this newest study, and I'm certainly someone who I want to see more, But at least the newest study indicates that women are asking just about as often as men are, which kind of goes against some of the stereotype, doesn't it?
It does. Women are asking just as much as men. This recent study that you're citing in 2018 by Harvard Business Review, published last July, is showing that women do ask just as much as men. The challenge is that they are being told no or not receiving as much as men do. And so there's all these stereotypes about why this exists, or women are in different situations and you can't quite compare, but this study has over 4,000 participants in it. It's pretty extensive, and it shows women are asking just as much as men. They are receiving a very different result.
Okay. Listeners, if you are the type of person who kind of gets that sense of dread when you've got to advocate for yourself, when you're going for a negotiation, either a promotion, a job itself, or a raise, you know, no matter your background, this hour is for you. But certainly, this is aimed at trying to shore up some of those differences, some of those inequities. And before I kind of go around the table, I just want to ask Rachel one more question on this. How did you end up in a position where you felt comfortable to kind of lead these trainings? I mean, how did you get to the point where you don't have that same anxiety that so many people have in that spot? Or maybe you do and you can just suck it up better. I don't know.
I heard about Mayor Walsh's initiative, and so I signed up with a friend to attend one of these workshops. I was so compelled by the information that they were presenting in terms of the numbers and the facts and the figures. That same week that I attended that workshop, I read a study that the BBC had produced saying that at the current rate of change, the gender wage gap would not be resolved worldwide for another 118 years. I thought, I'm going to be dead by that time. What can I do? And I went up and asked the women facilitating this workshop, how can I get involved? And they said, we need facilitators. We need people who are trained to do this. So I signed up with AAUW. I became a member of AAUW and went through the training. And over the course of my last year and a half in Boston, facilitated 32 of these workshops and trained over 850 women how to be an advocate for gender wage equity and also negotiate theirs. I will say, since then, I have negotiated moving here to a new position that I have, and I started in June. That negotiation still gave me a tremendous amount of anxiety.
Despite all of the training that you did. So that's natural. It's a question of kind of dealing with that and still pushing forward and doing what you need to do, right?
Yes. Yet I did feel more confident in knowing the questions that I was asking, mm-hmm. and the conversation that I was having in the negotiation was okay to have. It still caused a lot of personal anxiety, but sure. It gave me more confidence to have that conversation and not shy away from it.
Irene Kenya, when you think about the idea of either negotiating for a position, getting a job, getting a promotion, getting a raise, do you feel any sense of discomfort?
Yeah, I feel anxiety because I frankly haven't had to do that before. So up until now, the positions I've had have been mostly like government jobs where it's a set salary. So I do want to practice today. I'm very excited for that. But I'm very aware of obviously the gender wage gap, the fact that Equal Pay Day for Black women happens in August and not in April or whenever it happens for white women and everyone else in the country. Like, I'm aware of the uphill battle it already is going to be. So I think it's important for all of us to at least be armed with all the tools and all the information we need to negotiate our salary. And it's interesting because a lot of my peers, millennial generation people, are doing a lot of job hopping because we know that, like, we're not getting offered the money that we deserve. And so it's the trend for us to just say, okay, if we're not going to be offered a fair amount here, we're going to go somewhere else. So if companies want more loyalty, they might want to start also accepting women who begin to negotiate their worth. So,
or perhaps a position that pays X but doesn't carry benefits, or is made to be part-time instead of full-time.
Exactly.
Yeah. So in those situations, no surprise that mm-hmm. people may be looking and moving pretty quickly.
Exactly.
The same kind of research that indicates, hey, the stereotype that we have that women don't ask for raises as much as men, that has largely gone away. There is a psychology difference, though. From what I'm reading in various studies, if you ask men, when you ask for a raise, do you think you're going to get it? Roughly half of men say, yeah, I expect to get it. Roughly a third of women say, yes, I expect to get it. And that, I mean, it varies in study to study, but definitely men understand that they're more likely to get it. Do you feel like if you're in that situation, you're going to get what you ask for?
I'm pretty skeptical.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think that probably that psychology study rings true for me, too.
And I want to ask in this next question in a way that is not seeking at all to kind of to denigrate the important work that Rachel's doing and going to do for us here, but also to ask you, when we talk about training to negotiate, is there any sense of that that feels victim blaming? And by that, I mean, like, you know, should there be this this gap to begin with?
Right.
Yeah. How does that
Yeah, I know what you're getting
sense?
At.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think there needs to be a training of the hiring workforce.
Yeah, the executive, sure.
There are a lot of interesting trends, not just about salary, but trends, especially for Black women and the way that hiring happens, where there's the concept of glass cliffs, for example, where Black women in particular get hired into positions that they know are either not going to succeed or be terminated, or they're chosen to be hired because they know that they can offer a lower salary. I was just looking on my phone right now at a study, a Pew Research study. It was reported, I think, on CNBC.com from last year. It was about how Black job seekers are even given lower offers to begin with in the salary negotiation. The quote I want to read is from the Pew Research study was, each time a Black job seeker was perceived to have made an offer or a counteroffer, it corresponded with the receipt of over $300 on average less in starting salary in the report. So, I mean, that I think that's pretty telling.
Okay. Hilda Rosario Escher, you know, in some sense, I was surprised that you're here today. Here's why. Producer Megan Mack was like, oh, well, you know, Hilda wants to be on the program. I'm like, you know, Hilda has a long resume of experience. And, you know, I thought the idea that you would even have anxiety about these situations, knowing you as I do, was a little surprising to me. And I shouldn't have been judging, but there I was. So what do you think?
Oh, yes. I feel a lot of anxiety. I in my past position, I never asked for a raise. Not only anxiety, but feeling bad about asking for more money.
Why did you feel bad?
Well, again, because my life has been about giving back and not thinking about myself. And you know, my son many times tells me, Mom, you don't know your worth. You have to speak for yourself and ask, you know. But it's again, and I think that also it's more cultural, because we have that culture of ay bendito, you know, that just feeling bad about asking for things.
Hold on. Tell me about the ay bendito. Tell me about that a little bit.
Oh, ay bendito. You know, they probably will not be able to do it. So even before you ask, you're telling yourself that the employer will not be able to do it. I mean, when I was at Ibero, you know, the board would say, okay, we're going to give you this much. And I always said no, because I will not be able to give the same to my staff. So if they gave me 5%, I would say no, because I'm going to give 2% to the staff. So I don't think that it would be okay for me to take 5% and give 2% to the staff. So for me, it was feeling, you know, not feeling comfortable accepting.
Sometimes having a big heart does feel uncomfortable. It's very admirable. And were you in a position of, because I don't know the organizationally the structure, were you making hiring decisions and pay decisions for others who were coming into the company?
Oh, absolutely. So, yes, so, all the time.
So even though you felt anxiety about what are you getting paid, and you've got family members saying you should ask for more, you've got to respond when others want more.
Right.
How did you feel and about kind of handling those situations?
You know, with that, it wasn't bad because all I had to do was look at the budget of the program, you know. And for me, it was I was really happy to increase the salaries of the staff, you know, because in the non-for-profit sector, staff do not get a lot of money. So I really squeezed everything that I could out of the budget to, you know, make salaries better for the staff.
Did you ever hold it against anybody for asking? Here's why I ask. I have been in positions of asking before. I've had anxiety, and I come from the most privileged class. And I had anxiety. Like, it always goes well for people who look like me. Not always. Usually. And yet I can't imagine what it must be like for women of color, for people from different backgrounds, asking, knowing the history of our country, knowing what the statistics say, and then underlying that, knowing what I've felt, which is, if I even ask, is there going to be sort of an etiquette breach here, a social cost, a work cost? Did you hold it against anybody for asking?
Of course not. No, I would never hold that against anyone. And, you know, I would meet with the staff and let them know this is something that I cannot do at this time, but let me see how we end up the year. And if we are in a good position, believe me, I will be the first one to give you that dollar raise.
Sure, sure. Irene, would you feel in the future any anxiety like you're going to be penalized just for asking, for pushing?
I always feel that. I think it might be true in some cases. But to your point about what you said, I'm happy that you are someone that ran a nonprofit that didn't hold it against employees. But I think, so nonprofits, I don't have any statistics, but it seems like a lot more women are in those fields. And I think as a woman on the staff, you might feel bad asking knowing because you're in the field because you want to do good for the community. So it is that feeling of being selfish that's ingrained into you and not thinking about what you're contributing to the company. And some people do work with the budgets and they know how limited it is. And so it's hard. It becomes hard as a staff asking for a raise. It's like, well, and then on the other hand, sometimes you're a nonprofit and you see the budget and you're like, wait a minute, I know that there's money. Why aren't you giving it to me? It's been on both sides of that.
So I'll ask Rachel Roberts if you want to kind of take us through what either a mock negotiation or a little training would look like. So I'm going to turn the floor over to you.
Okay, great.
You want to start with Irene?
I will start with Irene. So she and I corresponded a bit online, and the scene right now is going to be I'm calling to offer you a job.
Okay.
I have told her, you can confirm, that I have said nothing about how this conversation will go. This is completely a mock conversation, though I do have my notes right here.
Okay.
So Irene, thank you so much for interviewing. We all have enjoyed getting to know you, and we would love to offer you the position.
Awesome. Thank you.
Great. So to make you an offer, I need to know what you are currently making.
Well, I am interested to know. No, I already messed it up. That question throws me off.
Mm-hmm. You don't have to divulge either your most recent. This
yes.
is a negotiation. So you can, you want to throw a target, a dart at the wall and
yeah.
hit a number. I don't care what you say. It doesn't have to reflect what you recently been paid. This is just kind of walk through.
Let's just say, see, in the mock negotiation, but I don't think I would want to give my salary. Am I on the right track? But so I'm interested in something in the range of 30 to 35,000 a year.
Great. I don't know that I have a budget for that high of a salary given what this position is, and you would be the highest paid employee in that category.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm happy to explore that further later.
Okay, great. So I'm happy to send you the salary in writing and the benefits for your review. And could I have an answer by the end of this week?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, great. So that's
what it sounds like.
I mean, in a fictitious scenario, yes. And sometimes there's more back and forth.
Yeah.
So. But breaking that down, I saw the look on your face.
And this is a mock negotiation. It's not even real. And you were feeling it, weren't you?
Yes.
And what were you feeling?
I was like, oh, I don't want to give a number.
And your instinct was right.
Right.
I want to first say, you know, when I said we enjoy getting to know you and like to offer you the position, your first response was enthusiasm, mm-hmm. which that's great. And I deliberately threw out that question, I need to know to make you an offer what mm-hmm. you're currently making. That's one of the things that's in different states right now. Massachusetts has passed. That question is illegal, and other states are working towards making that.
How about New York?
It's not passed yet, and it's still legal. But to
that's a heck of a leverage play.
It is, yeah. Because if you consider the gender wage gap, if women and are already... And the race, yes, absolutely, wage gap. If you consider that those demographics are already paid a lower rate, having to divulge that information will then just continue to exponentially keep that divide going. So your instincts are absolutely right of not wanting to divulge it, but what are those deflection strategies
right.
to use?
I didn't know what to say.
Exactly. And so what I would encourage you to do is attend one of these workshops, take it online. There's tons of deflection strategies online by saying, well, you know, I'm curious to know how your company values this position and where it falls in the compensation standards that you have. That could be one way of saying it. Or if they ask about your past salary history, to say, actually, this is a different position than what I had previously applied to. And so I'd like to be compensated equitably for what this position requires of my skills and experience.
Yeah, you know? Those are good. I kind of just ignored the question and they said something else.
Yeah, exactly. And if they keep pushing, then figure out a response that way. Mm-hmm. But that's the second piece. And hopefully when they come up with a number, they will be the one first, because the person doing the hiring should have that number in place. They should have a range for what they are looking to achieve and to pay that person. And I was similarly working in nonprofits before, and when still I'm in a nonprofit, but when I had the responsibility of hiring people, I would talk with them and say, this is the budget that I have. I'm offering you the top of the budget that I have, you know. And another, not everyone operates that way, obviously, but another strategy too, if you are making movement with the salary number or even not at an impasse, to consider is the benefits. What is it that you really value? And it's not just the healthcare, whatever contributions that could mean, but it could be working remotely or having access to professional development funds or having more time off negotiating that. Perhaps you're moving to an organization or a company that starts everybody at the same place, yet you've been at a higher level previously. I think knowing your strategy for how you will approach a negotiation and what works would be important to do. If you go to the salary negotiation workshop, either in person or the one online, there's four steps to how to prepare. And the first is knowing your value. This is separate from a resume that you put together, but how do you value the contributions that you make and what interests you? What are you proud of? And how do you sit and write that down separate from writing a resume, but have that a piece of your value so that you can refer to it all throughout this process? When you negotiate and ask for more, it's a chance to remind that employer or the hiring manager that this is why you hired me. This is what I will bring to the company, and be able to refer to that multiple times in different contexts. The second step of the salary negotiation strategy is doing comparative research. So what are the resources out there to compare what different salaries are? And in your situation, as an independent consultant, so to speak, it's harder because those are not as transparent. In nonprofit, it's harder because every nonprofit has a different pay scale that they have. But there are places to begin to go to. One is salary.com. That is what AAUW recommends. And the importance of going there is because it is employer-reported data, not employee-reported data. So an employer who reports would be able to have all of the information, salary and benefits, to make a more equitable comparison. So doing your background research, understanding what that compensation could be. Salary.com is one. If it's posted online, which that was also another part of the law in Massachusetts, is that employers, when they post jobs, have to list the salary range so that it's transparent for everyone to understand what that salary range would be that they're applying for. And then to understand where you fall in that range. How do you equate the value that you bring to position, how does that value match with what that range is for others being paid in that area? And so it's not just deciding on this is the number that I believe I should fall in this continuum, but then where do I start negotiating? Because it's always a give and take from both sides. So if you decide on the number is 35, you wouldn't want to start right at 35 or whatever that number may be.
Is there a disadvantage to having to put a number out there first?
It can go either way. The material that AAUW suggests is that you want to prompt the hiring manager to always say the number first.
Okay.
But there's so many different studies out there. You can hear it from either side. But the way I have always operated is trying to get the other person to say the number first.
Irene, when you were even just going through that little mock scenario, you've mentioned that there was anxiety and you're thinking about how do I answer this. The interesting thing is this is a scenario where they're saying, we've chosen you. We want you for the job. Like, you know, you have the advantage of you're the person. And yet you still seem to be talking in a way that was sort of like offering some kind of doubt. I don't know how to approach this. What doubts did you have or what was kind of going through your mind?
I mean, yeah, the doubts were that I got the position, but it was going to be something much lower than what I expected. And it's a little bit, and I was going to ask the question to you, Rachel, if they ask a question that's illegal, what are you supposed to say? Because I didn't know if that was something you're supposed to ask. What was your previous salary?
Right, when I deliberately threw that
yes.
one out there. I would encourage you not to say that's an illegal question in Massachusetts,
right.
You know, but instead
or if it becomes illegal in New York,
yes,
which it could, but
it could.
It's not yet, but go ahead.
Yes. I would encourage you to answer with one of those deflection responses and finding another way and being prepared. And even oftentimes this happens over the phone. So write these notes out in front of you so you don't feel like you have to recall everything from memory at the very beginning. But have it in front of you and say one of those deflection strategies. You know, I'm really curious to hear the range that you have for this position and how you value this type of work. And then the important thing is just to be silent after that and let the other person respond and see what they have to say.
Okay. Yeah, I think that was what threw me for a loop. So,
how to kind of negotiate that little murky moment.
Yes.
Yeah. And can you ask, could Irene or candidates ask, well, I'd like to know what other workers in similar positions in the company are paid?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Either ask what they're paid or ask what those ranges are for those different levels of positions.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an odd feeling to have, especially when it's your own negotiation, but getting back to that deflection strategy of how do you ensure that this is equitable across the organization, equitable for what that pay is and how they value the compensation across the entire organization is important to know.
Irene, do you think you would have a feeling that if you ask for too much, they might rescind an offer?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. My hope is that that doesn't happen very often, Rachel. These are professionals. They know that people coming in the door are going to negotiate and that people should be dissuaded from thinking if you negotiate too hard, they'll literally rescind the offer.
Right. And I would like to say that that happens all the time as well, that they understand it's a negotiation. In teaching and leading these workshops in Boston, I have heard stories otherwise, though not a lot, but I have heard a couple women share stories and say, but when I ask, I was called back 5 minutes later and said, actually, we are rescinding this offer and offering it to someone else. Or in a contract level position, another woman saying, being told, well, I can hire somebody else for a couple dollars cheaper, so I'm going to do that, and just hung up the phone. So even though you want to hope the best of everyone, and I would like to think 99% of the time, it is that conversation and that dialogue, because it is just a conversation. A negotiation is a conversation. There are instances that other women have shared where the opposite has been true.
Okay. How do you feel coming out of this?
Well, I do feel a little bit more prepared, knowing that there are multiple other ways to deflect those very direct questions. But, I mean, yeah, it was kind of what I expected. So I think it's just practicing.
Okay. Mm-hmm. After our only break of the hour, we'll see what Hilda and Rachel talk about. And if you want to get in touch with Rachel Roberts, who has been doing this in our community, what's the way to do that, Rachel? Are you available?
I am available.
Okay.
And if you're interested in learning more, please feel free to email me, rroberts@esm.rochester.edu. Or if you are interested in hosting a workshop or attending a workshop or becoming a facilitator, I would encourage you to email salary@aauw.org.
We're talking about negotiating for more. And we're kind of toeing that line between effective negotiation and understanding some of the inequities that women, and women of color in particular, already face. Men and women tend to, according to the newest study on this, out of if you've been heard for the earlier part of the program, I think it came out of Harvard, Rachel? Harvard Business Review. Men and women tend to ask for raises roughly at the same frequency. Men get them more. And we're talking about why one of the structural issues is understanding that men are more likely to get them. And so addressing the fact that that would be a desirable goal to change that, while also saying, with the current reality, how can we negotiate at the peak of effectiveness? So Rachel Roberts is here leading that. Irene Canyon, you just heard Irene get filleted in that. I'm mostly kidding. That went just fine. And Hilda Rosario Escher is next. We'll also take some of your questions and comments on the other side of this break on Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Wednesday on The Next Connections, the Landmark Society getting ready to host a conference with at least partially an emphasis on getting more diversity in the preservation field. We'll explore it. In our second hour, can you succeed in STEM? Specifically, can companies that do science and engineering succeed without the arts and humanities? Some fascinating real-life stories that'll get us thinking about the arts and humanities and STEM. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Sarah writes to us and says, Connections should do this once a week. Well, I don't know about once a week, but I think people are at least appreciating learning about some of what sort of can and cannot be asked and how to navigate those waters. And Rachel Roberts with Hilda Rosario Escher, what are you going to do next year?
I'm going to continue with the AAUW Work Smart training. And one of the pieces in their workbook that they have in this curriculum is actually a sample role play scenario. So I thought you and I could read this role play that is set up and kind of deconstruct the differences between what Irene and I experienced and then what this role play is as well.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay. Hello. Thank you for meeting with me today. I'm so excited to talk about your offer and review the details about joining the organization.
Well, we think you are an excellent candidate for the position and would fit in well at our company. Given that, we hope you will accept our offer of $58,000 a year plus benefits.
Okay, thank you. I'm confident I will bring a lot of value to this organization. However, according to my research, the market rate in the area for someone in this position with my demonstrated skills set it's about 60 to 68,000 per year. Would you consider an offer within that range?
Going above 58,000 is close to the maximum salary I can offer for this position.
I appreciate that. However, given my experience, reducing expenses and increasing revenue by 15% in my current position, hope we can work together to come to a salary that reflects my qualifications.
You are very qualified, and we are really impressed with your track record. The best that I can offer you is $62,000.
Thank you. I'm also interested in discussing the benefits that you have available.
Sure. What are you looking for?
I am looking for retirement. I'm looking for health insurance, funding for professional development that would enhance my skills.
Great. Well, we do have a competitive healthcare benefits, and we also are a matching employer contribution for retirement benefits. And I believe we can offer you up to $500 towards professional development annually.
Oh, thank you. This is a very generous offer. Can I please get this in writing? And I get you an answer by the end of the week.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Okay, so end scene.
This was effective on the part of the applicant. Is that right?
Yes. And I'm curious to hear from both of you, what are the biggest differences that you noticed in this role play?
Well, I had it in writing.
It's easy to stick to a script, right?
I knew how to negotiate. You know, I never done that before. And again, even in writing, I still felt like, I felt bad and anxious about that.
You're reading a script that's not even real, and you're feeling somewhat guilty as this person.
You got it. She felt the ay bendito again.
El ay bendito, yes.
You almost went off script and went, okay, 58,000. Hilda, if you would have done that, I would have been very disappointed. In real life, the Rachels of the world said, Hilda, it's going to be X, and you had asked for Y, in real life, you've always said, okay, X it is.
Yes. You know, with the current company that I'm working with, when I was talking to the person that was hiring me, he asked me, well, is this okay for you? And I said, yes. And then after I said, no.
You said no?
That's the worst feeling when you didn't say what you wanted to say.
Because I was feeling so uncomfortable. Yes. So, and then I said, so how much is my experience worth to you? I'm going to be saving your company.
Wow. And did it work out for you?
Still in the process.
We'll find out.
That's what I should have said. But I think the difference was you offered a number. The hiring person offered the number first. So
that is a big difference.
You know, that gave some leverage.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The negotiation that sort of the role play that we just heard from Rachel and Hilda, it reminds me of a scene from one of my favorite movies, Defending Your Life, where they're reviewing the life of Albert Brooks's character. And it's the night before his salary negotiation. And he wants to role play with his wife. And he says, you know, do this for me. And she goes, okay, what do you want? And he said, $60,000. And she said, we're prepared to offer you 50. And he said, I cannot work here for a penny less than 60. And she says, 52. And he says, $60,000. And then she goes, 55. And he goes, you're not hearing me. I cannot work here for a penny less than 60,000. They fast forward to the next day to find out how early it went. He walks into the room. The guy says, Daniel, we're prepared to offer you $39,000. And he says, I'll take it. And, you know, it was funny because it has really all of the veneer of truth here. And Hilda was reading a role play character and was yes. almost the person who was like, no, 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 50, let's stop right there. 58 sounds fine. Yes. So why does that happen? Even when we prepare sometimes, Rachel, mm-hmm. we've got to stick to that. I mean, it probably takes some practice, some rehearsal is a good idea.
Absolutely. And that's step four of the AAUW training, is having the ability to role play. And not just role play the employee, but role play the employer, so that you have practice in thinking through what is it that the person on the other side of the table may be thinking and preparing from his or her perspective. In these workshops, there's two. One is called Work Smart. It's for working women who are in the workforce looking to negotiate a new job or a raise in their current role that they have, a raise or a promotion. And the second is called Start Smart, which is geared more towards college-age students who are looking to negotiate their first salary. But the fourth step of both of these programs is to have that time for role play, both in the workshop, but then there's a tremendous of a great workbook that accompanies both of these to take the information home and continue practicing, continue diving into those resources and putting together your own plan. Step three, which we kind of skipped over, is about developing your plan. What are you going to say? How are you going to say it? What are the other pieces of preparation that you will have? And how does that connect back to step one of knowing your value? How will you bring that back in? And Hilda, that was something that you said during this mock negotiation. I'm confident I'll bring value to the organization. And given my experience reducing expenses and increasing revenue by 15%. Now, of course, this is fictitious, but it gets to the point of you were able to clearly recall, this is the value that I am bringing to that role. And that's such an important step to know. That's why it's step one. How do you articulate your value and get ready to share it with other people throughout your interview process, but then again during that negotiation process as well?
So you want to do a follow-up call with Irene?
Sure.
Yeah.
You want to do it?
Okay.
All right. We're going to do this. So Rachel, you want to kind of set the scene again for our listeners?
Great. So Irene, I'm going to be calling you, offering you a position again.
Okay.
And same scene as last time. Let's act it out differently.
Okay.
Okay, Irene, I've really enjoyed getting to know you, as have all of my colleagues, and we would love to offer you the position.
Awesome. That's exciting. Yes.
Great. So, you know, can you tell me what you are looking to make in this position? I need to know that to make you an offer.
Well, I know I have years of experience in audio production, and I bring an audience with me. And in particular, I reach out to intercultural communities in Rochester. So I'm very excited to bring this to your organization. Given the value I bring, I would like to request $50,000.
Great. I want to end scene right there. Mm-hmm. I think kudos to you for responding and articulating your value on mm-hmm. the spot. I think that's great. But when I ask for the number that you're looking for, I think instead of responding back with that number, find the appropriate deflection strategy to try to get me to say the number or the range first. Okay.
Because what if Rachel's thinking 55?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know.
Or what?
So I would like to know what your range would,
compensation
what
range.
Your value is for someone who brings all this to your company.
Exactly.
That would be, yes.
Great. And so if you would have ended it there, I could have continued by saying, well, you know, I'm sticking with what you just said, Evan. I'm prepared to offer you $55,000. Mm-hmm. So what's going on in your mind right now? If you were going to say 50, but it's at 55.
I'm like, wow, that's great.
Yeah, fireworks.
And then
you
I guess
play
I,
it cool.
And then I guess I would say, okay, and then I would like to know what your benefits package is, or
right.
Yeah, inquire about benefits.
Right. Mm-hmm. And even if it is above that number, if you were asking for 50 and they offered you 55, there still could be the opportunity, if you felt it warranted it, to push on that number a little bit further. That may be the very maximum that they have, but chances are most people start on the low end expecting to come up as well. And mm-hmm. so if you've done all of your market research and you've done your comparatives and understand what where this position is valued and where your value fits into that as well, mm-hmm. you might still want to negotiate again on that particular number and then talk about the benefits and getting it all in writing.
This is good.
And see, there again, it just takes practice. It takes doing it multiple times and feeling comfortable with saying, this is the value that I bring.
All right. You feeling pretty decent about it now?
Yeah. Feels good to ask for $55,000.
Go get it. So I want to read an email from a listener. Rochelle in Penfield says, I understand the concept of knowing your value, but as someone who has been in multiple negotiations with the same company and is told each time that there's just not an opportunity to raise my salary, what's the strategy to use then? Because I'm aware that other people with my job description have received raises, but I haven't. It's hard not to take that personally or feel like I'm not valued. That's Rochelle. Rachel, what do you think?
So that's a very real feeling, Rochelle. And it's hard to understand who's making those decisions, why they're making those decisions. And I think if that's a message that you've been told repeatedly, the choice then becomes, do you spend your energies fighting towards trying to change something that has a track record of not changing, or do you spend your energies towards searching for another position that will value you and compensate you at the level that you deserve, that's equitable with others throughout that organization? Okay. So especially if you have had that conversation numerous times and are still getting that same response, it then becomes a personal question to yourself. Where do you spend your energies?
Okay. I want to ask all three of you before the hour's out here, what you think, what direction you think we're going in? And by that, I mean, are we going to see more of a movement towards less negotiation, more of, and I mentioned the Reddit CEO, but others have said, look, let's just set a salary for a position and we're not going to negotiate. We won't put people through that. That way we won't have these gaps or inequities. Do you feel good about that? Or are there other things that could happen that are going to change where this gap is? Hilda, how do you feel about that?
Well, I think that with the movement that is going on now in reference to equal pay, there will come a time when, after all these two bills are passed, that there will be more of an opportunity for women to get pay what they are worth. And I would say that employers will have a standard pay for the same jobs, you know, whether a woman occupies the job or a man.
That'll become more normal?
I would say.
More typical?
I would say, yes.
Okay.
Yes.
What do you think, Irene?
Two things. So, I think it's going to take a long time for that idea of there being a set salary, no matter who the person is, to be set in place. But even so, like, are they still going to ask women to do a lot more of that extra labor that women are found doing in workplaces? And then along with that, I'm looking into freelance work now, and that is that's an area where you do just set a rate and if they can accept it or not. So I think there's going to be a lot more movement towards freelance work. So a lot of millennials are moving towards that right now, too. So, yeah, I think both of those things.
Gig economy, huh?
Gig economy.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Rachel, what do you think?
I think that there's a tremendous amount of research going on right now that is illuminating a lot more of what is happening, what is reflective in the workforce right now. And knowing that data helps to validate some of these feelings that we have had or experienced in our own lives, but also helps to inform how to make change for the positive. While I love these salary negotiation workshops, they are geared specifically towards women, and it doesn't necessarily address the allies of men, or it doesn't necessarily address what happens when you transition genders, which there have been some preliminary studies that show if a man transitions to a female, she is paid less, but if a female transitions to a man, she is getting paid more. So there's a lot of factors that go into understanding what wage equality means for everyone in this country and in this world. And I think it will make movements and make progress. I just hope it's not 118 years until gender wage equality has been reached, but it still has a ways to go. And that's why, you know, I lead these workshops, whether it be in Boston, University of Rochester campus, elsewhere, and would encourage everyone to visit salary.aauw.org to find out more about this information, whether you want to take the course online for free or you would love to host a workshop or facilitate one yourself. It takes a village to make change happen.
So to Sarah's point, I can't have Rachel on every week because she needs to get paid for what she does too. But if people want to get in touch with you,
yes,
and they're interested in hosting a workshop or hooking up with you outside of this program, how do they do that?
Yes, my email is rroberts, R-O-B-E-R-T-S, at esm.rochester.edu, or email salary@aauw.org.
Thanks for being here. Thanks for helping illuminate some of these issues
for
us. So thank you. Irene Canyo, Hilda Rosario Escher, putting yourselves out there. Thank you for sharing your experiences. Really interesting stuff this hour. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Our thanks to Rob Braden, the engineer. David Griffin is a volunteer today. Megan Mack is the producer. I'm Evan Dawson. Have a nice afternoon. We're back with you tomorrow on member-supported public radio.